Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome to Game Week. This is 11 Personnel. I am Nick Roush, joined by Adam Luckett to preview Kentucky's season opening kickoff game against the Warhawks from Monroe, Louisiana, before UK kicks off at noon against ULM at the Krogh. We got to thank our good friends at La Rosa's, because there's no better way to prepare for your tailgate than with our good friends from the best local pizzeria in town. Sports are back. You deserve every single second to enjoy it all. They're ready to make it memorable with crowd pleasers that include an order of up to 50 wings for all your friends, or an extra large pizza, or two or three or 17. Well, Rosa's has it all. They will make your game day a guaranteed hit. Visit us at LaRosa's.com to order pickup, delivery, or join us in our dining room. Take your Caturday to the next level with La Rosa's. Luckett, our long national nightmare is over. We have college football.
Before we get started here today, Nick, which, by the way, shout to La Rosa's. If you're looking for some late night pie for LSU, UCLA, Clemson, Georgia,
Nevada, Cal,
some Pac-12 after dark, hit our people up over there. But first of all, we got to start with, I just saw this tweet. I believe this is a guy who's on that podcast with SEC Mike. He quotes tweet that South Carolina is starting graduate assistant Zeb Nolan, and it's a picture of Paul Blake, the quarterback from Necessary Roughness, the 35-year-old they bring off the pitch, which is just what Twitter was made for. But man, so, by the way, this kid's wearing number 25, I believe, or I think he changed his number, but his practice number was 25.
Oh God, that'd be hilarious to see a quarterback wear. Like, I think 22 really is as high. Like, and that's because of our Jared Lorenzen bias. Anything higher just seems weird.
Yeah. Virginia had a guy that was wearing like number 36 last year, and that was really weird.
It's just off-putting. But yeah, Zeb Nolan, yeah, I guess we will start there because it's worth mentioning. Louisville fans are so confused by this because they were getting in trouble for having graduate assistants practice with them. That was one of the things that Dino Gaudio was trying to hold over Chris Mack's head to turn him in. And here's the thing, folks, a graduate assistant, yes, technically Zeb Nolan was a GA, but Zeb Nolan also had another year of eligibility because of COVID. He could use that waiver. Like, it's, yes, he's a graduate assistant, but he's a grad assistant with eligibility. This isn't like your typical GAs who have exhausted their eligibility. I just thought it was funny how they were like, well, they can have a guy start at quarterback, but we can't have him play. Like, it's funny to make the jokes, but like that, they are different.
Yeah. Just the whole how this thing is like, Zeb Nolan played at Iowa State, left, went to North Dakota State, was going to sit behind Trey Lance last year. But COVID happened. FCS played a spring season.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Lance dipped out to enter the draft.
Right.
Nolan became the starter. And he was not good. He got benched after 7 games. And then North Carolina State put somebody else in, and he wasn't going to be the quarterback anymore. So he hung up his cleats, was going to start coaching, and wasn't even working with the quarterbacks. He was working with the wide receivers as a GA. They get to camp. Their quarterback gets hurt because somebody steps on his foot. Like, he didn't get hurt in practice running around. He got somebody stepped on his foot. I'm assuming a lineman stepped on his foot.
Right, during like pass pro or something.
Yeah. And broke his foot. And so South Carolina looks around. They only have 2 other scholarship quarterbacks. One is another FCS transfer. The other was a true freshman, like a mid 3-star recruit. And so they go, hey, so they have a couple practices and they're like, well, this ain't going to work. They bring out Zeb Nolan and now he starts. I just can't believe it. I think that's just,
oh man,
it's wild. I cannot believe he's going to be starting a game.
What's even funnier too, I didn't realize he was working with the wide receivers. Something about South Carolina, they just recruit receivers that play quarterback. DeCarrion Joyner played some quarterback for him last year. Luke Doty was a wide receiver before moving to quarterback. So, man, Shane Beamer, no wonder the administration didn't spend much money on that guy.
We mentioned there's some Joker Phillips stuff going on. Like back when he took over, there was like 2 years in a row where every receiver Kentucky took was like high school quarterback. Like none of them play receiver. They were just trying to, I guess, get that Randall Cobb, Keenan Burton
kind of athleticism, magic.
Right? Yeah. But it did not work. But yeah, that's what they have over there, South Carolina. It's just now they play FCS Eastern Illinois.
Yeah, so they get away.
But next week they go to East Carolina, and I think we're going to touch on East Carolina later.
Oh.
But that's a game I think they can for sure lose. So
yeah,
they need Doty back fast, and that just kind of shows what kind of state that program is in right now. The total was 3.5 for a reason, season one total.
Well, let's get to Kentucky football. This is the final week of game week prep. Mark Stoops spoke with the media yesterday. There was a much anticipated wait for the depth chart. Look at what jumped out to you when you finally saw that first official depth chart, which wasn't technically official because they had to edit. They meant to have DeMarcus Harris as the second Z receiver instead of Chauncey Magwood,
which was kind of a sign that the coaches don't make the depth chart. It's just maybe someone else is over there making it.
Right, you made a mistake.
Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't a huge take. It was about what I thought. The fact that Devontae Robinson is really kind of the only Sam Nickel player they have right now without Vito Tisdale and Joe Williams. Like they just stuck Marquez Bembry there.
It's like, we'll play Sam. We'll go bigger.
Right.
And now that – The other safeties can play that position too. You know, like you can
Jalen Guy. You can probably slide Geiger down there, maybe, or Dodge Dotson. I mean, who knows? Right.
Right. Right. Like, even if you don't move him down there, you can put him at free and move Asian down to nickel or
Corker.
Exactly. So, you know, that's expect, you know, like, There are ways to wiggle around, but there's no denying that right now, as we currently sit with six players sidelined stemming from that March 6th accident, they're thinner in the secondary at that position. And Quandre Mosley is just the backup cornerback for both spots. It was Drew Phillips was going to take one of those. So you are running a little thin at DB right now.
Yeah, I think you can get away with three outside cornerbacks. If one of those three guys got banged up, specifically one of the starters, they could potentially maybe be in trouble.
Right.
So that's definitely going to be an area of concern or worry entering the season.
Mm-hmm.
Then elsewhere, I mean, it was about what expected. I thought we'd see Wolobah over DeAndre Buford at left tackle too. But Buford was there. But I think it's also important to remember if someone else plays left tackle, then Rosenthal is probably going to be Kennard kind of sliding over, I would imagine. And then Flax taking over for right tackle.
Yeah.
And so that's just kind of where we stand. But really, really what you expected there on that first depth chart. No real huge surprises.
A lot of seniors, not a lot of freshmen. You know, obviously Trevin Wallace is getting involved. Yeah. Khalil Sanders, he's one of those guys that has he was raising all sorts of hell on scout team. And they were like, okay, is this guy doing well just because he's on scout team? And then they've gotten him involved in some of the, you know, reps with the twos and stuff, and he's still been well. And I think that's one Luckett that he was taken as sort of a project, but has exceeded early expectations. I think it's good to know that he's done that well this early in camp.
Yeah, I think long-term at his position, there's three guys he's looking up to right now. When you look at Octavius Oxenine, Abule Abadi Fitzgerald, and then Isaiah Gibson. So playing, it's going to be hard, but I mean, it seems like a redshirt year where maybe he can play a few games. But similar to like Carrington Valentine, he's hitting checkpoints as a true freshman that are kind of good to see. I think when these coaches talk about some of these freshmen like that, that's something we should monitor moving forward, that's probably going to be a guy that maybe as a second year player or a third year player, it's going to have an impact, maybe not so much as his freshman, but there's a guy that seems like they're excited about.
Elsewhere, as far as guys who will or won't be available, Nasir Watkins suspended for the first four games of the season. He had a knee injury last year that kept him out most of the time. He's played a lot of football, so I would expect him to have a role, but I mean, you just don't know at this point. You know, he might have gotten himself way too far behind the eight ball. We don't know, but go ahead and mark him off the list, scratch him off the list for the first four games of the year. J.J. Weaver, they did take the red jersey off him last week, which is good to see. So that means, you know,
he's full contact in practice.
Right. And also, like the old saying, you know, you aren't going to play if you don't practice. Well, he's at least done some of that. They're going to keep him with snap count. I can't imagine him playing a ton against Monroe, but I can see them getting him out there, getting his feet wet, letting his toe, you know, just play around a little bit and see how things go back there, because he's going to play a significant role for this defense this fall.
Yeah, to me, I'm conservative approach for me with J.J. Weaver this year. Just a major injury. You know, people have come back and done awesome off of it, but I'm just proceeding with caution, I think, and let's just see how he does these first few games before we get a little too ahead of ourselves there. But I think other than that, though, it's good to have him. I mean, it's better than alternative.
Oh, right.
Because then you got two, you know, solid bodies there with him and Jordan Wright there at that weak side jack linebacker. So it's sounding like, Nick, that they're pretty healthy right now, to our knowledge at least. They haven't really had too many concerns with injuries.
Yeah, might have to trot out a different punter, but, you know.
Yeah, but then Snoop said on his radio show last night that he's going to be ready, because he said on Monday that he would have to see it practice, but then he said on his radio show he's going to be ready to roll this week.
Okay, well, good.
Wilson Berry. So it sounded like they're having him. I know a lot of people were not super thrilled with the kick return operation last year. Just putting Zach Johnson back there and pretty much fair catching almost everything. Soup's kind of confirmed that that's kind of what they're going to do again this year. And so I thought maybe we could see one of the younger skill guys maybe get a crack there, at maybe making some plays happen. I've always thought Travis Tisdale, that could potentially be a role for him. But it sounded like they're just sticking with the former walk-on super senior, Zach Johnson, there at kick return.
Yeah. I like Zach Johnson more on kickoff, though. That's where I prefer him.
Yeah, he's good at covering kicks for sure.
Punt return, I know he said they'll rotate, but I hope it's Wandale just from
I think it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, you got that guy, use him, you know.
And the Nebraska-Illinois game, a lot of that was a big reason why Illinois won was hidden yardage in the punt game.
Oh, man. Okay.
And so fielding punt, and that's why we talked about Charles Walker was awesome. He saved Kentucky so much yardage. And I think specifically in 2017, he had Kentucky, if you looked at, they didn't grade out well that year, but they won a lot of games because they won a lot of close games. And I think Charles saved them a lot of yards in some of those. And then last year we saw some of that go away. Ali wasn't great at fielding some of those kicks. I think Wandale could give them a little more confidence in doing that. And I think he could be a guy that probably is the main punt returner for most of the season. But yeah, we can get to Illinois, Nebraska.
I'm going to say too, before we dive headfirst into it, there's still things going on with the six guys and their charges. It's been talked about at length. We don't need to dive into it anymore, but you know, all that stuff's out there. You had the guy say that Vito took a polygraph. Yeah. I will say the whole, here's 20 guys that we think it is, and then we're going to search 12 guys' phones, and then we're only going to charge six. Seems like they were really spraying the board there. That feels shaky at best. If that's how the process went about, it just makes me question the process. So I don't know. I know they're claiming that Jatan McClain was a guy that never got out of the car, just drove the guys there. If that's the case, what's he even doing off? Like, he should be playing next week. He should be playing right now if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean,
especially if the charge is burglary, like you can't force your way into a house from somebody's car unless you're driving through it. So
big takeaway was this was finally we heard something from the person.
The other side. Yeah, yeah.
So now we've got the other people, the other side talking through WDRB, and then the players kind of talking through this guy. What's his name escaping me?
Denny Butler.
Denny Butler, who's been on Matt's radio show the last couple of days. So that's, now there's some public information at least, and we'll see Not sure when the next court thing is, but
right, we're just we'll
see where that
kind of waiting and seeing. So hopefully that's get expedited. But one of the fun stuff: Illinois versus Nebraska. Like it. I mean, I should have known going into this game that the first points of college football were going to be a safety. Did not expect it to be that hilariously achieved, but it makes perfect Big Ten West football sense, right, for it to just be a dumb special teams mistake gets one team on the board.
Yeah, that entire game, like, it was kind of coaching malpractice. And then I think Bielema and his staff, I think they did a really great job coaching that. Like, they coached that team to a win. Nebraska really had no excuse losing that game. Like, I kind of dug in the roster after the game, and I was like, these players should be better. I know they've lost some transfers, but they should be better. It's just – that's tough, man. It seems like in Nebraska, they lose every game like that. And I was an analytics Twitter account I follow. I think it's Sports Source Analytics. Kind of tweeted out kind of like when you look at kind of their success rates, their yard per plays number, their explosive play rate, like Nebraska should have a much better record than they do. But their turnover margin is awful.
Yeah.
And their hidden yardage and like special teams numbers are awful.
Well, when you're, I think the record's like 7-15 or something like that in one score games.
Yeah. I think it's like 4-13 or something.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's coaching. Like, yes, you have – sometimes football happens. The ball bounces the wrong way, you know. But, like, if you look at Mark Stoops' record, I think he is 11-4 since 2016 in one-score games. It's coaching. That's discipline. And when you're grabbing a ball and throwing it out of the end zone for on a punt return to try to not get safety, to only to safety, like, that's bad coaching. That is Scott Frost saying on Monday, quote, about half of our game plan was out the window when they lined up how they did. Like, what? It's the first week. Like, that happens.
I can't believe he's even saying that.
That happens every – like, you do not know exactly what it's going to be, especially with a new staff where Bielema has been with the Patriots. You know, he hasn't been a coordinator recently. You know, he's been doing, like, offensive line gigs in the NFL. So, to go out and say that, I would almost rather my coach just not be so honest, because you sound like a moron, Scott Frost.
Yeah, I don't want to hear that, because you've got a senior quarterback in his fourth year in the same system.
Yeah, like, dude.
Like, Adrian Martinez should be better. He's seen every front. I like that. That is just just lame excuse making. And it's, you know, like, I don't know, man. It's almost coaching malpractice. It's just bad. It's just bad. He's still got, I don't know, man. I don't know why he's never gone out and like gotten a legit, like gone and paid for a defensive coordinator. I don't know why, like, you know, Martinez has just been up and down, why he didn't go get like a grad transfer quarterback.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't add up. And the part that really doesn't make sense, I get that you definitely have, like, when he was at UCF, in a lot of instances, there was just more athleticism. There was more talent.
Well, he was also a one-hit wonder, Nick, and that's something I've kind of floated out. Like, Jamie Chadwell, people love him. People are breaking, like, scheme people on Twitter, like, saying how awesome his offense is and all this. Like, it was 1 year. Like, I want to see the, like, when I evaluate these coaches, I want to see it year over year. Frost got, they just got hot. They got hot in one season. He had an awesome quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And then he left, and everybody crowned him like he was, like, on that coaching search, it was like he was like the hottest name you could be. And Tom Herman was kind of the same way. He had 2 years, but in that second year, they showed some flaws. They lost three games they really had no business losing. And they got up for big games, and then they did not get up for other games. And that's exactly what happened at Texas. They were up for big games, but then there was the random games that they should have won and they didn't. And so for these coaches, like, I think we just overreact to them sometimes. Like, mm-hmm. You can go, like, I think Old Takes Exposed has sent it out. There's tweets out there of people after one season, they're claiming Frost is going to be like,
you know, a dynasty builder.
Right. Yeah. It's just, and that's a lot of times you just don't know. But because both those hires, Herman and Frost, like, it made so much sense. Mm-hmm. Like, you just don't know. And a lot of these small sample size, I pumped the brakes on because it's just one season. And you're right. They had the best roster in the conference, and they just got hot that year. And so when you go in a conference and you don't have the best roster, you know, what can you do?
I had somebody the other day, because, you know, I'm joyfully tweeting during Scott Frost's demise, and somebody was like, man, you just hate him for no reason. I wouldn't be this hot and bothered over Wandale. But dude, that was one piece of the puzzle. It was even more personal that, like, yeah, how they were praising Scott Frost, when it's like, Jeff Brom, your family member
should have got that. Yeah,
he's doing the same thing, but he's already done it in that division. Like, he was rocking and rolling for the first 2 years there. And then he gets injuries at quarterbacks. There's some excuses to it. You know, he's lost some games he shouldn't have as well. Yeah. But, like, he at least went to a freaking bowl game, like, in Nebraska. And that was at Purdue. He's at Nebraska. Like, that's the part that kills me, is it's all of these coaches that everybody just gets behind and just crowns. That was your word. This anointed one, this hot name in coaching. Those guys just drive me nuts. And it's all because it's cheap, low-hanging fruit. It's an easy story to write because he was the quarterback there. But you know what? He hadn't done anything, okay? And that's what drives me nuts. And I also like to kick Nebraska and keep them down because they are very similar to Tennessee. I love to hate on these programs that live in the 90s. Nebraska, it ain't coming back. It ain't. You can get close. You be grateful for what Bo Pelini did for you, because that's where you are right now. You can be an 8-9 win team. You can go and play in a few Big Ten championships, but you are not who you were in the 90s. Tom Osborne ain't walking through that door with a bunch of dudes on roids and 5-foot-tall shoulder pads and tearaway jerseys. That just ain't happening. Those days are done.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple reasons for that. TV, one, 85 scholarship limit, two, their location. And then Nebraska had top 15 recruiting potential in the Big 12 because they could recruit Texas.
Right.
That was taken away when they went to Big 10, but they still have top 25 recruiting potential. I think realistically they can achieve that every year. But a thing I think Nebraska and even Jeff Brom at Purdue's had trouble with is it's hard to recruit speed in that division.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just hard. Nebraska tried to go to South Florida, and similar to Kentucky, it just didn't work. They just didn't work. Culturally, it wasn't a fit, I guess. A lot of guys left. It just didn't work. And so when you look around that division, you look at how Pat Fitzgerald and Northwestern win games. You look at how Iowa is on a hot run, how they're winning games. You look at how Wisconsin has done it for, you know, a decade now. Like, it's all about, you know, building an offensive line, a defensive line, playing smart, sound football, establishing the run, and then just getting a little bit of passing game. And I just think that's kind of how you have to win there. And I think that was probably the biggest thing with Frost, is just that the style of ball, I don't think, suits that division. And now when you look at where Kentucky is, Stoops is kind of perfect for that division. I mean, he's playing Big Ten football in Lexington.
And it's more palatable too in the SEC, even though there has been more passing as of late. Things have really opened up offensively. I mean, you just, like, the stereotypes are true to an extent. And that's what makes conference realignment not as fun, because it's fun to just say the Big 12 doesn't play defense, Big Ten West just runs the football and punts. Like, it's fun to have these generalizations, but you can generalize to an extent because a lot of it is true. You know, and it's almost been square peg round hole in a lot of instances.
And it's a lot when Mark Stoops talked on his radio show yesterday. It's, you know, he was like talking about hiring Cohen. He's like, who wouldn't want to be Oklahoma? You would love to be Oklahoma's offense. Mm-hmm. But when I was making this decision, I have to base it on like what talent you can get to Kentucky, like what players you can successfully recruit. And for like the Big Ten West, it's just hard to kind of that high flying offense. I mean, even Chip Kelly has kind of changed. They're becoming a lot more run heavy now than he ever used to be.
Yeah. Well, I think some of that's because DTR can't throw a football. His forward pass struggles with him.
Well, I think it also gets to Nick. What we talked about this offseason is that defenses are getting smaller. And so there's more advantages, I think, if you're able to successfully, you know, scheme up a ground game. And I think that's what you're kind of seeing, and I think that's what Kentucky's going to, we're going to kind of see from them this year.
I do need to mention too, while we're talking about it, like what the hell were all these people thinking playing West Coast teams at noon on Saturday? Like, do they not know that there's like you can air things in prime?
Yeah, they should have gave us a one.
Like the like Miami, window, for sure. Like the UCLA against Hawaii. Hawaii has no business playing when the sun's out.
Yeah, well, and apparently nobody in Los Angeles wanted wants to do anything at noon on a Saturday in Pasadena.
There was nobody there. I mean, there was.
There will be more people at the St. X Mel game Friday.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the KSR's game of the week than there was in the Rose Bowl that day.
We intervene our college football talk to tell you that St. X, you're going down. Luck it. You can suck it. But I'm excited to go. We will be there live and in person. Hopefully you come hang out with us. Look it. I haven't run this by you yet, but are you open for a little Tim Tam pregame?
I'm always open for a little Tim Tam.
Okay, good, good. So no doubt. If you want to come hang out with us, the local watering hole right across the street. We'll get there, 6 o'clock or so. Come hang out.
Yeah.
Might even open up a little Q&A on the Instagram, Facebook story, something like that. But we're going to have a lot of fun there. Excited for some high-octane high school football action. We're lucky. St. X is, they are for real this year, but they're like
banged up right now.
All right. Chuck was being a jerk about it. Is Micah Carter going to play?
I haven't heard. All I've heard is that they had multiple starters out. Now, I don't think he tore his ACL, which is long term the best thing.
Yeah,
but I don't know that. I'm hoping to find that out when we go to the game on Friday. But they're going to be out multiple starters, is what I'm hearing on defense.
Not great.
And I think Mill. Yeah. There's some question about Sayla Brown whether he's going to play or not.
Yeah, I forgot how they described it, but he hasn't really played much at all. Like, he hasn't played this year. He tried it out a little bit in the summer and tweaked things up. So,
and those are kind of the two prospects. And then there's an offensive lineman for Mel. He's either a sophomore or junior that Kentucky's.
Well, he's out too. He's out for the year with the shoulder.
That's right. Yeah.
So now that doesn't mean there's still not talented players. Is it Vinny Anthony? Is that correct?
The wide receiver going to Wisconsin.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He plays for Mel. And then, man, I do like St. X's quarterback, though. He's a scrappy dude.
Both quarterbacks are solid high school quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So with these defensive injuries, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a shootout take place.
Oh, man. Wouldn't that be great? If it ends up getting to, like, last week where we go down to a final kick. And that game against Lexington Catholic game didn't end until like midnight because it was
a doubleheader, right?
And it was too hot to play early on. So I don't think we'll be there to midnight, but it would be great if we did in dramatic fashion. So hopefully y'all join us out there at Reverend Brother James, whatever it is.
It's like Brother Will Stadium.
Do y'all at least shorten it to something? Because it's way too many words.
I don't know. I don't know what they call it.
It needs to be Brother Bob Stadium. It can't be Reverend Joseph Brother Bob. It's like 17 words.
I don't think they have a nickname for it yet. Maybe we should get to working on that. Maybe we can name it for them.
We aren't good at naming things, though. that is one thing we are not good at doing.
It has to happen organically.
Yeah, that's true. You
can't force those things.
Brevity, not exactly our strong suit either at times. But we do have a ton of games happening this weekend. We'll talk a little bit more about Kentucky, Louisiana, Monroe at the end of the show, but I want to get right into talking about the Saturday slate, or not even the Saturday slate, the weekend slate. We got 5 days of football, and there's no better place to just crank up the action on your football Labor Day weekend than by getting in on some of the action on MyBookie. Thanks to MyBookie and their lock of the season, if either team scores in this NFL season opener, you win. So think about this. This is for the NFL, though. This is for next week. But
Bucks Cowboys.
Yes. Yeah, so a game hasn't ended 0-0 since World War II. So you're going to get money no matter what. Just head to mybookie.ag, lock of the season, and any team scores between the Cowboys and Bucks, you win. I mean, it's just $10. Boom. That's all it takes to enter some of these. You're going to win with mybookie.ag. They've got a ton of exclusive contests, including their $100,000 super contest. That one's only $10 enter. I'm sure that this lock of the season has a maximum wage, but you can't turn down those promos where it's just free money. You can't. And in my bookie, you can play from anywhere. You don't have to be outside of the state of Kentucky to play. So get an account with mybookie.ag today. Use our promo code PERSONNEL and instantly receive double on your first deposit. That's right. Double your funds and then go double your winnings with some of our picks. That's the promo code PERSONNEL to double your first deposit and get started with my bookie today. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with my bookie. Look it.
There hasn't been a game in the NFL in 0-0, but my God, Virginia Tech and Wake Forest did that a few years ago, and we've got one of the best memes of all time for Frank Beamer.
Oh, Frank Beamer, that is great. They end up going overtime and settling it, but man, that is just hilarious every time I see it. And it's always appropriate. Like, it's one of those memes that it doesn't get used often, but at the right time, it's always like it's the only meme you can use sometimes. That, and was it the Virginia guy who was leaning over the wall, Virginia Notre Dame, I want to say? Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Gosh, hilarious stuff. Hilarious stuff. So, like it. I know you've got some locks. We don't need – I don't want to go through every single game, but Thursday night, we've got a pack slate. I don't think we're going to get to watch Tennessee lose to Bowling Green because Bowling Green is very bad. That would be fun. It's going to be a really ugly game as far as, like, color-wise. Brown and orange and white, just a lot of just – you know, it just
– That is an ugly color game. Well, I didn't even think about that. Yeah,
it's not a very good color game. Ohio State, Minnesota, though, we got a Fox game. Mm-hmm. And
CJ Stroud's debut for the Buckeyes.
Am I wrong in my hesitation on CJ Stroud?
I think he's pretty good.
Okay, so I'm probably wrong. I'm just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you never know, but what I've seen, what I've heard,
but they're pretty good. The best game of the night, though, should be, the other two might even be better than the ones I mentioned, and that's East Carolina against Appalachian State and Boise State Central Florida.
Yeah, Boise State UCF is the game there. I think I'm going to have maybe a little action on both of those. That Boise State UCF total, I think it's 68 right now. It opened at 68.5 right now. I like that under a lot. Boise State's got a defensive head coach, Andy Avalos. UCF, Gus, you know my feeling on his offense. I think it's going to be kind of an odd fit with Dylan Gabriel.
No, but he's the Messiah.
The Messiah. Next great, you know, he's going to change college football.
Was that Dennis Dodd who wrote that? Who?
It was either Dodd or Thamel. I can't remember. I think it was Dodd.
Who said that Gus Malzahn is the future of college football. It's like, buddy, he's 10 years in.
Yeah. We literally had those same articles about Gus in 2014.
Yeah, like, what are you doing, Dennis Dodd? God.
Yeah, but yeah, that total is a little high for my liking. Be our first underplay of the year. Probably going to fire that off.
East Carolina App State, though, that's I don't think you can call it a rivalry, but it's in state. There's a lot
solid
of the
regional game.
Yeah, and they're both the unheralded, like, chip on our shoulder. We don't get enough respect kind of card. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's at App State.
Both have a rich football history. Both have had a lot of success.
Right, so
that's in Charlotte, Nick. They're playing in neutral, unfortunately.
Oh man, we're not going to Boone. Which, by the way, Boone produced one of my favorite games. Whenever the snow game and all the wind.
Yes,
App State, Georgia Southern. Maybe that was
Drinkowitz. Yeah,
man, that was something else. But App State, East Carolina. I think I might be playing the Pirates there. 10.5 points. That's a lot of points.
Since we're here. Our money line picks. This is it this week.
Whoa.
East Carolina plus 320.
Wow.
I'm high on this East Carolina team. I think they have a legitimate shot to beat South Carolina at home next week.
Wow.
This is a big year for them. Their head coach is in year three. Holton Ahlers is a senior quarterback. He's played a lot of football, four-year starter. I just think they have some of the pieces in place. App State's breaking in a brand new quarterback. Chase Bryce is going to be their quarterback, I believe, the Clemson/Duke Clemson. And he was bad last year at Duke. I think East Carolina could be due for a special season. Now, this wasn't my favorite week finding a game.
Yeah, but this was a little tough because there's not a lot of big dogs. Right. Like if the dogs are out there, they're pretty large.
But I like East Carolina. App State's got some moving parts. They're bringing in a new offensive coordinator as well. The guy who was on Louisville staff, Frank Ponce.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like the Pirates here. Like their continuity there. I think they're gonna break through and go get to a ball game this year. So I'll take it's plus 10.5, but that money line plus 320. So lock in the Purple Pirates. Let's see if we can get a nice score early in the week.
So when I was looking through, because we don't want, you know, like this is gonna be a dog. It's gotta be a dog. Cause I'm really that UCLA line, it's tempting. The Louisiana Lafayette one, I think they did this a year ago and they upset Iowa State.
Right.
But the line has dropped 8 points. And I can't go that much with the public. And I also think
it's a very public dog, especially week one. You got to watch some of those public dogs.
I don't trust it. And the way Sark, like, I think he'll have this team much better prepared than folks expect. They might, I don't think they'll cover, but I do think they'll win. That game. So what I'm going with a statement win on Sunday night. Down go the fighting Irish of Notre Dame. Florida State at plus 225, 7.5 point dogs at home. This is where you can rally the fans back to Tallahassee and get a big one as Notre Dame tries to transition out of the Ian Book era. I'm not incredibly confident in it, but I feel like that's a fun enough underdog play to make on a Sunday night when that's your only game going on.
I actually got it here at Nick plus 240. So I'm gonna write you down for plus 240.
Okay.
Florida State. You still got 7.5, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You got Florida State plus 240. I like that one. That's a sneaky team, I think, this year. They've got some talent now, thanks to a lot of those transfer portal additions, plus some good recruiting. No, it feels like a big reset year for Notre Dame. Like Jack Cohn doesn't, that feels pretty safe option at quarterback. They lost a lot off last year's team. Florida State's going to have more speed in that matchup. Huge. That feels like almost like that a couple years ago where Notre Dame went to Texas. Texas beats Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Texas and then you get that back. Juice
for the Sugar Bowl. Yeah. Yeah.
And then they just also, go 5-7.
And Miami did this. Now it was in the middle of the season, but like this is Notre Dame beating them every once in a while when they're not good is how a team in the ACC like says we did it, you know. Like, so I can definitely see a
barometer.
Yeah, and it's also can give you false confidence too, just because you beat Notre Dame, even if they were good, bad, indifferent, whatever it may be. So I like our money line picks.
I do too. I think both of those. I think some things are going to have to bounce right, but I could see both those teams winning those games.
Yeah, like you can close your eyes and picture both happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and it's Thursday, Sunday, so you're going to be able to watch both those games, really.
Dude,
the favorite
night,
part about week one multiple. Is everything's so spread out, so you get to see all these games. Where it
now, we know with one caveat, like we got to move some of these Saturday games to Sunday, like Miami, Alabama. Who cares about you at night? Clemson, Georgia's happening. Wait, they're actually doing the day
3:30.
Either way, let's get a couple on Sunday. You don't have NFL games. Let's move some over to Sunday. Space things out. I can't have football nonstop Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then just two games Sunday, Monday. Give me a little more. Give me a little more.
Texas Tech, Houston's in that night window on Saturday.
Yeah, give me that.
That'd be a fun like Sunday 3:30 game. Yeah, leading to Notre Dame Thursday. I agree.
Do you like either of the games Friday night?
Scroll up here.
There are some fun ones.
I do like North Carolina, lane 5.5.
That one, we were talking about it on the football podcast. I can't imagine
I'm fade Virginia Tech this year.
I just can't. I don't understand it. So good. We're on the same page there. I don't understand that one. Man, so much football. I'm gonna be doing that a lot this week. You know, just like football.
And also, Charlotte as a home dog was one of my trends. That I pulled up, I wrote an article, KSR, like the best betting trends going right now. Charlotte's like 8-2 or something. I don't have the number in front of me as a home dog in the last 4 years or something. So they're really good at home, and they're getting points. I wish it was we're off the key number by 0.5 point.
Yeah.
They're plus 6.5 at home against Duke on a Friday night. And Duke.
Duke stinks.
Right. They're not going to, you know, we're kind of waiting out Cutcliffe kind of thing.
Yeah. What's he doing? Like, is he, what's he waiting on?
Maybe he thinks he has a puncher's chance at Arch Manning. So he's just riding it out until that happens. And then if he doesn't get him, he'll, you know.
Can you think if, this.
I got a question for you, Nick. I was thinking about this right now.
Okay.
Let's just say Satterfield goes 6-6, 7-5, Scott Satterfield. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of in that gray area, not to fire. Cutcliffe retires. Duke calls him and says, come back home to Durham, North Carolina. Come be the head coach. Does he take it?
Yeah.
I think he would too.
He's getting the hell out of there.
Optics of that would be terrible. Louisville losing their coach to Duke, but I could see that happening.
This is his home ground. He knows how to recruit there. I'm still shocked at the lack of care and level of indifference from everybody at the University of Louisville that high school football coaches are just saying, who? What's his name again? Like literally saying, what's his name? Radio silence. They were up in arms 2 years ago when Bobby Petrino wouldn't recruit kids from Louisville. But now it's nothing. I don't understand it. Maybe they've got so many scandals over there they can't keep track of all this stuff.
What's happened to them now is what happened with Kentucky and Joker Phillips. Like, it's just kind of a malaise, fatigue sets in, complacency. Joker just stopped recruiting the state pretty much. If they were up against somebody, they would back off. They wouldn't waste their time. And kind of what was the theme of Kyle Tucker's The Athletic article was kind of that Louisville – just doesn't want to go. They don't want to spend the resources to battle Kentucky head to head in state. It sounded like their staff doesn't value the talent in state, especially in the city. Like we talked about Mel, like Devinny Anthony's going to Wisconsin. In Louisville, I don't think they really spent much time in that recruitment. Jawan Northington, they just kind of have on a back burner right now.
Right.
Those just seem like guys at schools that produce talent pretty consistently. I mean, hell, Manuel's right across the street. We've talked about Mel, how it's just been a Louisville feeder program for forever. That seems like a mistake to me.
I mean, and I don't know why you wouldn't go all in, at least even from an optics standpoint. I mean, yeah, they've got Minkins and Watkins. Those are the only two guys they've gotten in 3 years.
Since then, they're just not. It's like after that, they just said,
"Yeah."
It's to me, it seems like he said, "Screw it. I know North Carolina. We're gonna recruit North Carolina hard, and we got some guys on staff with some ties to Georgia, and then we're also gonna dabble in South Florida a little bit, and then just said that's, and then we'll recruit JUCOs in the portal." But that's it. It's almost like they're not even.
No, they've completely resigned to it. What I don't get, though, is just the people. Like, there's some people over there, like, you know, the sheriff, he's a dingus, a complete moron. But, like, there's some people that are big-time Louisville fans that I'm shocked that they aren't more upset about this. And, I'm frankly disappointed in them. Like, if that was my program, if the shoe was on the other foot, then we'd be questioning what the hell is Mark Stoops doing.
Yeah. It's just, I think they're just complacent. I think they just kind of accepted what Satterfield is and they're just, I don't know. But I just worry when you get like that and you get to a point where you're like, because what is going like, I'm just going to get the players and I'm going to scout better and then I'm going to out-scheme people. And it's hard to win like that consistently. Yeah.
Well, and especially if you don't have like that, that's a really part of what you do when you build a program is you galvanize the fan base. And like, it seems like he's done none of that or even attempted to put in any effort in that regard. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't understand. Like, do you not trust the high school coaches around you to tell you that this guy's good? Like, clearly there's players that are good enough to play Power 5 football in the area. I don't understand the hesitation. I just don't. So,
yeah, like, why are they not? Yeah, that's my question. Why are they not good enough for Louisville, I guess?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Vinny Anthony, I don't understand that. Like, why, like, Jawan Northington, like, he's probably borderline. Like, he's probably a borderline Power 5, G5 player, I would say, as a prospect. But like, why would, I mean, he's right across the damn street.
Well, I mean, also they got Aiden Robbins. Maybe they're hesitant because they got him.
Yeah, I bet that has a lot to do with it.
But like, still, how many guys did Kentucky take just to get their teammate? And you know, like,
that's how recruiting works. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Yeah, dude,
Why aren't they in aspirations?
It makes no sense. I'm happy.
Like, they should be over there every day, three times a week, whatever. Just kind of like.
Yeah, checking in.
Just talking, you know, whatever. And they're just not even, they're not even over there. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like,
it doesn't get it.
Zero sense.
We talked about it more than we should Kentucky, this offseason. I love it.
Like, you can walk to aspirations from Cardinal Stadium. Like, we could walk on foot and get to the stadium from that place.
Yep.
And they're not even over there. And Kentucky is built like Kentucky's got they're getting everybody from over there.
I mean, we've had multiple national On3 reporters go over there. We've had more On3 reporters at Aspirations Gym than Louisville football coaches.
Think about that. They didn't even try to recruit Keontae Goodwin. That kid is going to play in the NFL. He is
nobody cares. I get having a coach who's inept. I don't get why nobody cares about it. That's the part that really baffles me. Like, I would be much more upset. And right now, there's only a handful of people I know.
Again, I just think it's just kind of a mixture of fatigue and complacency. It just is what it is.
Yep.
They, you know, eventually one day what's going to happen is one day you're going to look up. The roster is going to be bad. And then your rival's gotten all these draft picks, and then some of them are from Louisville. And you're going to be like, how do we not get any of those guys kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
That's really the thing. I think you can't build a program like that. You just can't. I don't care. You have to recruit your backyard. You can't just say, oh, we're not going to recruit the backyard. We're just going to go and get third tier, fourth tier players from other states. You can't do that. That's a losing strategy. That is not going to work.
And here's the thing, too, that, like, I know this is probably not at the forefront of what they're thinking, but you got it. If you don't get local guys, then you don't even get the local walk-on kids. Those kids make your program better. You know, like, you mentioned Charles Walker. Walker off the top, like, he didn't do a ton, but he was a solid contributor. David Bouvier, like, Kentucky has had successful walk-on stories where you're not all of them are going to do that, but that's something there. And then once you've shown those high school coaches that they can trust you with their players, they're going to send you more guys. It's not hard.
Local fan support, Nick, just people going to games, talking positively about your program because there's kids they know that play for you. Are in your program that they're cheering for personally. And that's also a way you can create more fans is by doing that.
It's just so silly.
Yeah. It's not going to work. If that's what they're doing, it's not going to work. It's going to fail miserably.
Man, can't wait to see it happen. Which, by the way, that number got all the way up to 10. So something to keep your mind on a Monday. Shout out to me for getting the number much lower. That'll be a fun way to end the weekend, watching Louisville get their teeth kicked in. Real fun way to end the week. Who's Vanderbilt got this weekend? Why am I not?
East Tennessee State.
Oh, that's why there's not a line. They have a horrible record against in season openers. I was ready to fade that, but never mind. Hey, who's going to win, Georgia or Clemson, Mr. Clemson Sports?
I do think Clemson's going to win. Georgia's just too banged up. And I trust Clemson's coaching staff more.
Kirby's pretty wishy-washy on some of his stuff, which is Eric Gilbert playing?
He's not with the team right now.
So
he's out.
Just the way they handle things over at Georgia is a little sketch.
Yeah, I kind of – that game, Nick, I think the total's at like 52, 51 now. But that first half under feels like the right play.
A lot of defense?
Just how good those teams are on the line of scrimmage, both sides, how good the pass rush is, both sides. You know, JT Daniels got a little bit more experience than DJ Uiagalelei, but it's Uiagalelei's first time playing in front of a full crowd in college.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's going to be some nerves early in this game. I think both coaching staffs are going to want to keep it conservative. Don't get in a hole early. And then I think in the second half, you can start to see those guys comfortable and letting it rip vertically down the field. But that first half under, I could see that being a 10-7 game at half or something like that.
Sounds about right. Good old slobber knocker to get things going. What isn't going to be a slobber knocker is Nevada just slobbing Cal's knockers.
Which is perfect. Perfect week one start, man. We get the noon game, so we're going to be settled in at home by 5, 6 o'clock, hopefully. Yeah, and then you get the night action, and then you get the late night action. Nevada at Cal. And Cal, Nick, is historically, under Justin Wilcox, they're bad at home against the spread. I think they're like 1-9-1 under him.
Oh, we're rocking the money line.
So
there's no doubt about it.
Plus 140 to win.
Man. Oh, only 3-point dogs. Sign me up. Sign me up.
Let Carson Strong get out there and cook a little bit.
Go out there and cook. I mentioned how, you know, Georgia can be a little sketch. Like in ULM, that doesn't sound like they're too forthcoming with anything.
Yeah, I haven't seen depth chart yet.
We have learned that Rhett Rodriguez, Rich Rod's kid, will be ULM's starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Now, Phil Steele has added some of their transfers from the portal as projected starters. And I've looked up from the local newspaper there, Adam Hunsucker does a good job covering the team. He's confirmed like that these guys are on the team. But then I go to the roster and they're just not there. And there's not bios for a lot of players. It's pretty barren over there. Like, what are we doing? Can we get some, you know, publicize your program a little bit? So, you're getting the deep dive from Luckett this week on the scouting report. I've already spent way too much time doing this.
Oh,
I haven't gotten much information. So it's dropping Thursday, but Terry Bowden's getting on my hit list a little bit, Nick. Like, this is almost getting annoying.
Hawk Talk is going to be on Fox 14 tonight at 9:30 p.m.
I did see that.
So you can watch Hawk Talk. But
I've watched 3 Terry Bowden press conferences last night.
I watched his
Media Day press conference. I watched Sunbelt Media Day press conference, and then I watched his introductory for 20 minutes again, see if I could get anything. Got nothing.
No, not a great football team. I think what's most exciting from a Kentucky fan standpoint is, you know, I don't think Rich Rod's going to slow down for anybody or anything. He knows how to coach, and that's with tempo. And tempo can get you into trouble. As much as Kentucky can struggle with at times, like, Kentucky's definitely going to give up, like, a random scoring drive or two because the tempo is going to get, like, they're going to get ahead of the chains. UK's not going to be able to sub with, like, some backups in. They're going to get some junk touchdowns or at least some junk Huang drives. Especially in that second half, you know, late third quarter, you've got a lot of young guys in. But I can't see a scenario where they aren't just like having 30-second possessions in the first half.
My thing with this game, both teams are playing themselves this week. Like, for ULM, it's a new staff, new regime, coming off an 0-10 season. You know, you're just looking to get better each week. And then potentially, hopefully, in conference play by the end of the season, get to a point where you can actually go compete and beat somebody. But, I mean, like, you look at their schedule, the season total is like 1.5. So, like, 2-10 would be a great year. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Then for Kentucky, like, you're a lot better than this team. But you're breaking in a new offense. There's some new starters, new moving parts. And we've heard Mark Stoops talk about clean, play a clean game, be game ready.
Do your job.
That's just the goal this week, I think, to get lined up, to not need timeouts because of play clock, to not have pre-snap penalties. And defensively, playing a tempo team, being able, you know, alignment, assignment, getting to where you're supposed to be before the snap, just doing that and doing your job. I think that's really the goal for this week. It's not the score. It's not any of that. Just be where you're supposed to be and play football. Because then once you do that, your talent will take over in this matchup. But to me, both those teams are playing. They're not playing the opponent. They're playing themselves. There's stuff that each wants to accomplish And like they could both, I think, accomplish their goals and be happy with the moment. But even though we know who's going to win the game, and that's what just this matchup is. It's really, it's almost like a glorified scrimmage game almost. It kind of seems like.
And the Cats are going to run up the score. Have you taken a look at the early weather too? It's not going to be miserable.
It's beautiful. Like you could not ask. High 70, like sunny.
High of 80. And that's at like 3 o'clock.
It's going to be chilly. Like when you get out there to tailgate for a little bit.
Oh man. Yeah. You'd be like, ooh, this beer really cold. Like what is, of all of the kind of college football opening weekend traditions that you're looking forward to, what are you most looking forward to?
I love just the Thursday night when it's here and just, you have all those games on and it's like the first time you get to sit down, have multiple games on the screen. It would be that and like combined with like seeing College Game Day for the first time, I think, even though I'm not probably watching it, but just waking up in the morning or, you know, having it on like that is kind of, that to me is the best. Having the Thursday night and then the Saturday morning leading into a full slate of games.
Man.
And I ain't going to lie, I don't hate the Sunday, Monday. Like that is pretty sweet to have that. Bang in the week.
I'm just looking forward to bouncing around to a couple different tailgate spots. You know, I have like two or three that I typically go to. You know, we didn't have that last year. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll grab a beer at one and then right about an hour, 30, 45 minutes before kick, go upstairs and I kind of get into my zone. But it goes from like that hour where I'm social butterfly to like, all right, let's get into game mode. That's a fun hour. Haven't experienced that in a long time. As much as I did the let's type about basketball games from behind a computer, I've been used to that. Doing that for football, it's not the same. It's not the same ritual. You don't get that feeling, that vibe that you typically get from the stadium. So I'm just
I'll be very interested to see. Whew. Sounds like the season ticket sales are in a good shape. They're in good shape.
They're in good shape.
I think the little 3-game pass, I think that's really starting to catch on to people. That's probably the best deal you can get.
Right, right. Especially because it's like, hey, I'll show up to the opener in the Missouri game, and then I got one more banked for October.
Yeah, I think there could be a chance for a good walk-up crowd, I think, because of the weather.
Yeah, and tickets are, you know, $20 online right now.
So I was telling somebody the other day, one of our listeners on Twitter, actually, you know, like 50,000, I think, would be a good – you get that in there for this game. I think that'd be a good sign for the attendance. That's 83-84% capacity.
Yeah, you're going to have the upper corners a little sparse.
Right.
And in addition to people who are COVID wary, a lot of people, Labor Day weekend, that's just Kentucky football, unless they're playing Louisville, they're going to the lake no matter what. You know,
the people that are going to the game, so Nick, I think, are past that for the most part.
Yeah, but I mean, like your general.
Yeah, you have to battle the lake for sure this weekend. People that do that,
like,
no doubt.
Especially with like bringing, like, all right, let's bring, you know, 4, 5, 6 people on that you could normally get in a walk up. They're going to the lake. Soon enough for that. But we're going to be enjoying the game, going to be enjoying all the action on MyBookie. Use that promo code PERSONNEL when you deposit and order some game day za. I'm actually, instead of before the game, it's going to be after the game for me. Look it. Pizza on a Saturday night after a lot of football.
That's what you got to do. That's what I was thinking when I get home. It's either going to be pizza or Roosters and just gorging myself there when I settle in and drink a couple Bud Lights.
It's going to be so much fun. We're going to be out there Friday night at St. X Mail for the Kroger KSR Game of the Week. Hopefully we'll see you out there. Luckett, I've got nothing else. You got any more parting words for our friends?
Just enjoy it, man. Like this stuff, it's going to go fast. Mm-hmm. The season's going to go fast. So just sit in your chair, buckle up, and enjoy the ride. It's going to ups and downs. Oh, we're going to have it all. But we'll be here to get you through it all. And let's just have some fun and enjoy it. We get this next stretch for 3 months out of the year, and that's it. And then it's over. And then we work 9 months a year to get back to it. So let's enjoy it and let's have a good season.
I'm tired of talking. I'm ready to watch. The Cats will be back on the field Saturday at noon against Louisiana Monroe Hawks on SEC Network. Get over there to Kroger Field if you want to come say hi. We're going to be hanging out at Gate 3 a little bit. The red Kentucky light. Roll Call group right in the red lot there on the left side of the stadium if you're looking for Nicholsville Road. So come say hey. Don't be shy. We're friendly. We don't bite. And we cannot wait for this football season to get started. For Adam Luckett, I'm Nick Roush. Go Cats!
Go
Kroger,